I'm very pleased to welcome to Fremantle Shipping News, Catherine Allam. Welcome, Catherine.
Thank you, Michael.
I should have immediately said Catherine Allam, the 2023 Fogarty Literary Award winner. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
And you've got a manuscript with the title. Will you tell our listeners the name of this book?
Yes, it's called The Skeleton House.
The Skeleton House. Mm. Always fascinated to find out if it's a working title, whether the editors, when they get to work, will encourage you to come up with another name. Did you wrestle with the name?
I did. Yeah, it was. It went through a couple of different working titles, some of which I don't really think I could remember. It's been The Skeleton House for a while, though, a couple years now. Certainly the most recent big edit made me go, yeah, that's a correct title. But I'm very open to changes. Georgia didn't have any immediate comments about wanting to change it, but we'll see. It's part of the fun.
Well, the title's a really important thing.
It is.
On the shipping news, one of the most exciting parts is putting a header on a story.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
It suddenly comes to you, but it does tell something about what's to follow.
Yes.
And is that the case in your title, The Skeleton House?
Yeah, I think the image of The Skeleton House appears very early in the story. The protagonist, Meg, is staring up at the family home in progress, and it's the first time the framing's been erected. So she can kind of see the outline and thinks to herself, that looks like the skeleton of a house. So it's that image that I took.
So am I right in thinking there's a couple of protagonists? There's Meg and husband Kyle.
Yep.
And they've got a couple of kids.
Yes.
And do I take it they live in Nevada?
Yes, yes.
And you once lived in Nevada.
I did, yeah.
Did you grow up there?
Part of my childhood, yeah. I moved a lot when I was younger. So I've lived in Oregon, Washington, Michigan, and then we went to Nevada when I was about 10, 11 years old.
So does Nevada become one of these places that comes into your veins, it runs through your bloodstream, it comes out in your writing?
Yeah, I think it's a place that I am fascinated by, and I sort of had to leave in order to get the distance to be able to write about it. I have a great difficulty writing about places when I'm actually in them. I feel like there's too much kind of noise and clutter going on. I kind of have to step away, and then I think when I look back or I think about it, I sort of remember the atmosphere and the feeling of a place, and I'm able to kind of distill that down and then write about it.
It was always said that prophets in their own land aren't appreciated. Perhaps, perhaps you have to get away from a place
perhaps.
To write about it and be appreciated.
Yeah.
So do you think people in Nevada, when this hits the bookstores in Reno and Las Vegas and a couple of little towns in between, will relate to what's happening?
Yeah, I'd hope so. It was my intent to portray the place honestly and sort of the different layers of it. Yeah, it's a place that I don't think is written about very often. Nothing comes to mind about a story that's kind of set in a small town with this, in that particular area of the country at least.
So let's imagine a 16-year-old girl is at the table here with us now while we start to talk about your manuscript. What would you tell her the book's about? Would you suggest there's a genre there to capture her imagination?
That's a good question. That is a good question. It's funny you say 16-year-old because it's to me it's definitely an adult story.
That's why I pictured it 16. I just wonder.
Yeah,
would it be too old for her?
I don't think so. I think, you know, especially in the older years of high school, I think teenagers and young adults are much more mature than we often give them credit. I was certainly reading a lot of adult literature and really taking in the themes and complexities, and maybe not the same that I would now in my 30s, but definitely reading a lot of that. But no, I'd tell her I think it's a story about somebody who, grew up in this small town environment and kind of found herself stuck there. And it's about a story that looks at kind of missed opportunities and second chances and,
So we've got a husband, Kyle, and everything suggests, and you can imagine, it's going to be the case that he appears to be the perfect fellow.
Yes.
But you probably can't tell us too much.
I can tell a little bit. I will say that, yeah, Kyle's very kind of well respected in the town, comes from a good family that's well respected. He's a bit older than Meg, and they, you know, from the outside have this wonderful little family. We got, you know, little boy, little girl, and they're building the forever family home, and, you know, he's an honest, hardworking man, and Meg is a very good, you know, stay-at-home mother. So they fit the community's expectations. But I think where the clash kind of begins, or is at the start of the book, that's really what kind of drives the action in the narrative, is, you know, he wants to build this forever family home. He wants more children. He has a vision of what, you know, their life should look like. And Meg doesn't quite agree with that. And that's where the tension kind of begins to build more.
Well, tell me a little bit about your own writing history, if you like, or even your literature background. When you were a girl starting to become really interested in that, and I imagine you're going to tell me at some point that you were writing stories and driving everyone mad with them.
Absolutely. you got that right.
Who were you reading? And no doubt it developed. You're reading women, you're reading men, you're reading both. And where did it sort of take you, so that moving on from the a little bit past the 16-year-old girl we were imagining being here with us, in your early 20s, what had you read? What was making you think about what you wanted to write?
Oh, that's a really good question. So yeah, 20 years old, I was in probably my third year of my bachelor's degree. So I was reading a lot of, yeah, contemporary literature, a lot of short stories. So I was really in workshop mode at that point. My bachelor's was in creative writing, and I took a workshop in fiction. I took one in poetry, nonfiction, a couple of multi-genre. I remember showing up to poetry class and, you know, go around the room, introduce ourselves and why we were in the class. And I said, I'm here because I don't understand poetry and I want to understand it. And I thought, if I'm taught to write it, I'll understand it better. So a bit of everything, but I've always been very character and voice driven in my reading and writing tastes. I like a good, strong character. I like to get in their head. I like to understand them and understand the way they see the world. So that's something I've always been fascinated by, and that definitely comes out in my own writing.
Well, you've been busy in all sorts of ways. You have a delightful web page, which people will go and have a look at, and they'll discover your blog, they'll discover your Instagram connections, and they'll discover that you became something of an artist at a certain point in your life.
Yeah.
How did that happen?
Well, it started with my mother putting me in the high chair with crayons. It came even coloring on the walls. So yeah, she, up until I was about probably three, she'd still stick me in the high chair because, you know, don't want to give children art supplies and scissors and let them run around the house. Our house was always just full of books and art supplies and craft supplies. And I've always enjoyed drawing and painting and all of that. But it really took off when I signed up to be a camp counselor as a summer job. I finished university, and that was
one of the famous American kids camp.
Yes,
isn't it?
Yes.
What sort of age are the kids at the camp?
We had everything from day campers that were 4 to 6 years old. They started staying over from 6 years old up to 14.
My goodness.
Yeah, so we had just about everything, and it was amazing. But they asked me if I'd like to start a drawing and painting class. So all the counselors would teach some class in a particular activity. Mm. I said, if you like, I can sketch, you know, okay, and send them some drawings. And they asked me to develop a program. And the funny thing about at camp is your activity to the children becomes your entire identity. So I was the artist in residence at the camp, just like the, you know, the guy who taught music classes. He was the musician, you know, in residence. And any time they wanted anything drawn or want anything, they'd, you know, come up to me. And I had a sketchbook, and I would just, at camp, there were all these little 5-10 minute pockets of time between activities and events, and I would just sit down and try to sketch something each time. And just that kind of, you know, over the course of I worked there 2 summers, and every day dipping into my sketchbook, it really developed my just artistic abilities. I was able to, you know, sketch things in the way and the style I've always kind of wanted to, and I took up watercolors and.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, that's been a fun other creative hobby of mine, which is great.
And can you imagine, as I hope you can, maintaining both these creative streams?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the writing, I think I've always known that I've wanted to be a writer. I want to sell my books. That's the, you know, the professional career aim. The drawing is much more a hobby and for my own enjoyment. I find it's a very good way to kind of get my brain to quiet, and I can concentrate and just enjoy what I'm doing on the page.
Well, here you are. You've just won the Fogarty.
Yeah.
And it comes with $20,000.
Yes, it does.
Prize. You can give off to the Champs-Élysées and spend it on all sorts of things, or you could be here in Perth and thinking about your future with it. Mm. You have a contract now with Fremantle Press for your book to come out next year.
Yes.
The whole thing must have just happened like a wild storm around you. I mean, how are you handling this? How do you feel?
The closest thing I can describe it to is jet lag. I feel like I have jet lag, where I just feel a little bit slightly off kilter, like time isn't, my perception of time is not the same as time around me. The night of the award, I just felt like I was floating. It was so exciting. And the anticipation, the run up, the few weeks to this, from the time I, you know, got the call saying I was shortlisted up until the event, was this, you know, whirlwind of activity of, you know, podcast and all the social media and listening to all the podcasts of the other shortlisted authors and reading their blogs and yeah,
so,
and now we're here.
Well, one has a sense for people like you who've got this capacity, you're being recognized for it, you're in this age of 18 to 35 that you have to be to compete for the award, you've succeeded, that your life is going to suddenly become a little different. How do you imagine it will change things? Will you become someone who just sits in the den all day writing, or you keep day jobs going, or?
Yeah, that's
you're
really
going to have media commitments and all sorts of things.
Oh yeah, I've had so many just in the last few days. It's been very exciting, but very different, because writing can be such a solitary, you know, activity, and working on this book in private for so long and talking about it a little bit to a couple of close friends and family, and then all of a sudden everyone wants to hear about it, and it's that's going to take some time getting used to, for sure. Yeah, I mean, I'll definitely keep day job for a little while. That's part-time, which is really nice. So that's 3 days a week, and I have a few more days to spare that I can, you know, carve out more time for more writerly activities. But yeah, the dream always has been that I can, you know, make a living off writing, and that will be that's still the goal. But I'm aware that a writing career is you're in it for the long haul. It's something that slowly builds, and
it's fantastic that the Fogarty's Foundation has this goal of encouraging local writers.
It's amazing.
It really is, isn't
it?
Yeah. Something else. Talking about a book versus sitting there in my proverbial den writing it. Is it good for the writer to be making that oral pitch as you go along, or when you start? Does it help your writing to talk about it, or do you need to be locked away with just yourself and your imagination?
For me it's a bit of a combo, and I think that every writer has a different writing style and a different preferences of you know, what stage in the process do they want feedback, at what stage in the process do they want to brainstorm or bounce ideas off people. And you know, I do a lot of thinking, but I do a lot of really good thinking out loud. So I'll often use, you know, my husband's kind of my main sounding board, so I'll run ideas past him, and he's the complete opposite. He's also a writer, and he is very solitary. He'll have a new project, and I'll know vaguely what it's about, but I won't know anything until he presents me with a first draft and says, "Would you like to read this?" Whereas he already knows all my characters, he knows kind of the main plot, you know, he knows a lot about the story and kind of the feel of it. So yeah, for me, I do like to talk about it. I find it helpful, but, you know, to a few trusted people that I know would be a good sounding board. Yeah.
we'll have a very small footnote to your husband, because he was going through all of this as a shortlisted writer in 2019,
yeah.
Michael Burrows.
Yes.
And he's since published and well known. That must be an interesting thing to do. Do you get up at the breakfast table and debate writing technique?
No, not at all. We're each other's biggest supporters, number one fans. I think we write very different things as well, so that's helpful. But no, it's been amazing. Just having another, like living with another writer is phenomenal, because we understand the writing process. We understand what it is if you really get in the zone and you just have to keep writing, because you're in that creative, you know, space, and you've got to get everything out before you forget. And the other person will just quietly kind of pick up the pieces around and, okay, well, it's 8 o'clock, maybe I'll start making dinner and quietly back away.
Well, you'll have time to work out the finer points there as time goes by. We've talked about Nevada. You explained how you got there when you were about 10. Some of the publicity talks about a nerdy, homeschooled, weird
yes.
kid. You don't seem to me to be particularly nerdy a weird kid, but I'm schooled. But you finished up at college doing your bachelor's degree, mm-hmm. and you were doing creative writing, and you finish up at some point in London. What were you doing there?
Yeah, so for my bachelor's, they had a very, that college had a very strong study abroad program. So I went over to the University of Nottingham for a semester, and upon graduating, I just wanted to get back over to the UK. Really enjoyed being over there, so I did make my way back, I was living in London, and then ended up going for a master's in creative writing there. I did a short kind of stint where I did part of a postgraduate certificate in education. I was going to become a secondary English teacher, because
just in case.
Oh yeah, well, everybody kept telling me you should be an English teacher, you'd be amazing at it. And I kept kind of going down that path until I got halfway through the program and went, I'm miserable. I don't enjoy this. I love teaching, but I didn't want to be a teacher. I withdrew from that and applied for the master's at City University of London that I'd had my eye on even before I graduated from my bachelor's degree. For a few years, I'd been looking at this program. I wanted it. So I went, you know what? Nope, I've tried the dream. Other people told me that that's, you know, what I should do. I'm doing my thing. And I got into the program, and that's where I met my husband and wrote the first draft of The Skeleton House. So
you can't complain.
I can't complain, no.
I love it when I hear people saying what I think you're saying about following your dream.
Yeah.
But you're also in London at a time, I think, when COVID struck
yes.
the world. Where were you living? Right in the centre of London?
We were kind of border zone 2-3, kind of down Clapham Balham area, in a really, really cute one bed flat, like a converted, I can't remember if it was Georgian house, really old, really cute. That hit, and that was, just like everybody, we were frightened, we were confused, didn't know what was happening. And over the course of the next year and a half, London was in and out of really harsh lockdown several times. It really felt like whiplash. It was just a bit, okay, the world's opened up. They're encouraging us with financial incentives to go dine in restaurants. And then a few weeks later, it would be, no, everyone should work from home. The restaurants are shut again. And that sort of, it was tough.
Were you writing the manuscript during that period?
I was doing a really big edit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I chopped out half the book and rewrote it, so I scrapped about 45,000 words. And
if it hadn't been for COVID, this is a strange thought, would that have happened, do you think?
I don't know. I've thought about that. I think there was a little bit of a recklessness, because I was stuck inside and couldn't actually do anything. And the world felt like it was falling apart. So I was like, all right, you know what, forget this. I'm gonna just try it. I'll check out half the book, try it, you know, writing it. I had a draft saved, it was okay. Wasn't making permanent changes. Maybe that contributed to my, I do have something I can control. I can control this book, so I'm gonna be bold, maybe.
So you have to get this first book out, but it's just something has to be happening, and now it's happening. And it's going to be like one of the books on the shelf here. It's going to be a published book with your title and your name on it, and it'll have a life of its own. And you no longer have to, in a sense, bottle that. You won't, no further chances, really, to do that sort of edit that you've just described. But do you start nurturing other ideas for other work? I imagine you do, while you're doing that sort of writing or even the editing. Is there some other part of you that's playing with some other completely new idea?
Yeah, definitely. I've had another idea that's been bouncing around in my head for a while. And I really sort of, in the last couple months, kind of from probably November of last year, I really sat down and worked hard on it. So I've got a first draft almost done of a new idea, which is really exciting. And I feel like now that this book is sort of, maturing, and it's now got a publishing contract, and it is going to go out in the world, and we will be, you know, buttoning up those final edits over the coming months, that I can really turn my attention to this new, you know, kind of beast of a manuscript that's definitely going to need some tough love. So that's an exciting prospect, to be able to turn and focus my attention into a new world.
Now, people who can't wait to see The Skeleton House and read it, of course, can go onto your blog, apart from other places, onto your website, and click on the bit that says fiction.
Yes.
and find some shorter fiction and read it.
Yeah.
So, what do you get from writing in different styles? Or can you imagine you continue to write relatively short fiction?
Yeah, it's funny. I don't have a lot of short fiction published, because every time I've written a short story, even if, you know, I've had positive feedback on it, I still feel like I want to do more. I really think that the novel and longer form fiction is sort of my home. That's what I really enjoy. I heard there's a podcast I listened to with a couple of American writers, and I think it was Annie Hartnett who said this, because she's very similar. She goes, you know, if someone told me, write a short story, I'd happily do it if I, you know, but it doesn't feel like a puzzle, where a novel feels like a puzzle that I get to put together and solve, and I have all the pieces, but I've got to figure out how they go together, where a short story is not, doesn't have that puzzle quality, because it's too short. It doesn't have the complexities of a novel, and I found that really resonated with me. I enjoy reading short stories. I think a lot of my longer, you know, fiction or ideas have started as kind of a short story, but I always feel like I want to go a little bit deeper. So yeah, I do like the novel.
The other thing, Catherine, that I'm always fascinated about, and you've gone through the whole process, bachelor's, postgraduate work in creative writing, how important that is that these days? How important was that whole process to you? What did you get from all of the creative writing immersion?
I think the number one most important aspect of doing the degrees was giving myself the time, the space, and the permission to focus on writing. That above all. You know, I've heard a lot of writers, you know, express, oh, well, I haven't done a degree in it. Do I need to do a degree to write? And absolutely not. You don't have to. And there are so many fantastic short courses that are out there, online courses. You know, there's so many wonderful programs out there. You don't have to do the path I did. I did that because I knew that's what I needed. I needed the, you know, weight of and the responsibility of a degree to really push me to really take it seriously. And I did choose the master's program, that one in particular, because at the end of it, you came out with a full novel draft. A lot of master's programs, you come out with 30 to 40,000 words, and I went, no, I don't want to write 30 to 1,000 words, I want to write a book. So that, for me, was really important, as I went, I'm going to do this degree, get a master's, that's nice to have, and I'll also have a novel draft.
Well, I'm imagining back in some not quite mythical time, after the Second World War, you want to write, you're a guy, you start to grow a beard, you go and find a Greek a Greek island and a little stone house on it, and you say, I'm going to write this great novel. And you might.
Yeah,
but
maybe.
you don't have social media, you don't have emails, you don't have the internet. You can write letters to friends, but it would be, if you did it like that, a very lonely existence. Is a community of writers and interchange between writers an important part of being a writer?
Yeah, it really, really is. And I think the Western Australian writing community is very special and very supportive. You know, even before winning the Fogarty, I'd go to, you know, events by Fremantle Press or other writing or reading events in the community, and everyone has just been so incredibly welcoming. And you'll get talking with someone and they'll say, oh, you're here because you're a reader. And I go, yeah, I'm a reader and I'm a writer. And immediately they're like, ooh, what are you working on? When's it coming out? Like, everybody just wants to know what you're doing, and everyone really lifts each other up. And that kind of encouragement, because I think whether it's your first book or your 10th book, writers, we struggle with a lot of self-doubt, and every book is a different beast. You know, every project is going to have its own challenges, and you've still got to fight past sort of the same milestones when you're writing a project. So yeah, having that encouragement and people who know what that process is like is just invaluable.
So we'll draw this to a close, but I'm wondering, the old classic, what you might have said to the 10-year-old you, the 16-year-old imaginary one I came up with, and stick at it or have a big dream. What would you be advising them?
Oh, definitely. And I would tell them, don't listen to anyone who says, what are you going to do with that English degree? That was something I got a lot. So yes, stick with it. Keep imagining. I think that one of the most important parts of being human is our innate need to listen to and tell stories. We all need it. That's how we communicate. That's how we bond. And, you know, not everybody is going to take that to the extreme I do with writing books, but storytelling is very, very important.
Well, Catherine Allen, we're all going to be looking forward to seeing the book come out with
Thank
an
you.
Exciting cover of some sort on it. The Skeleton House, your name, Catherine Allen, written on it in a year or so, 2024.
Yeah.
Good luck with all of the editing processes in between. I'm
Thank
sure
you.
You'll enjoy that as much as you have in writing it.
It's very exciting. Thank you for having me.
It was a great pleasure. Thank you for being here.